Hey, welcome to Listen Bitch Presents. Tell me why you're special. This is the arena where we don't perform perfection. We tell the truth because the truth is some of the strongest people you know are barely holding it together. They're working, they're parenting, they're showing up, they're smiling, and underneath it all, they're just surviving. A lot of people are not living. They're managing trauma, managing grief, managing addiction, managing identities they created just to survive. So today's conversation is about what happens when survival is no longer enough, when that mask cracks, when the truth finally is ready to be heard. Today's guest is Lisa Lacey. She's a writer, a trauma educator, storyteller, recovery advocate, and author of the upcoming memoir, Notes from a Certified Madwoman. Lisa, thank you so much for coming into the hot seat. I'm excited for this conversation. When you're sitting alone in the mountains after you leave the hospital, what truth about yourself finally became impossible for you to ignore?
That I could not transition from this earth with the story still inside of me.
Yeah. That's when you say these stories. Give us an idea of, paint a picture for our listeners.
The memoir itself gives us an insider's view on the psychiatric arena and what it feels like to be a psychiatric patient after having what looked like perfection, what looked like polish, what looked like success, the six-figure income, the house, the car, the perfectly blended family, all of it was a facade because behind the scenes, I was struggling. And Brandon, I didn't even know it at the time because I didn't have language for it. So it does a couple of things. It gives us an insider's view that I'm hoping will give people struggling a voice, but also give people in the clinical therapeutic arena the ability to maybe offer some more humanity to the people that are struggling.
Yeah. I say this a lot on this show with these conversations. I've been blessed to get to coach some really high income earning women and very successful women. And every time they sit down across from me, I feel like the story is the same. And I know what's coming. I know they're going to cry. I know they're going to tell me they're miserable. They've never been happy. They don't even know what to do. Like they're at the bottom. And it's easy for people to look at them. And this is what I think is so toxic, that curated Instagram picture of like what success is. They found that. But I mean, what the hell are we doing wrong? Like how are we not catching people early, like teaching our kids, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, because it is women my age, and I'm just like, you have everything I thought I ever wanted. And it's taught me such an incredible lesson of what is important. But it's heartbreaking because that's the truth, Lisa. There's so many people out there that are on paper just doing so great, and inside they're just dead. They're dead and sad. And you describe yourself as a collector of stories. What is one of the stories that you were really afraid to come to the surface?
The whole memoir,
Ah,
every
all of
story in
it.
it, yeah,
There's
all of
nothing.
it,
Gotcha.
yeah. And the thing about a memoir is your readers are gonna know if you're not going there. They're gonna smell that. They're gonna sense that. They're gonna tell that there's still something that you're holding back. But I'll give you a perfect example of a story in there that is the quintessential example of being a high functioning, high performing. And things unraveling behind the scenes. My second marriage was to a clinically diagnosed human with MPD. I'm not using that word lightly. I'm not using it just to describe an asshole. He was clinically diagnosed, and I was traveling for work and was on site at a hotel.
An
And
MPD, I just want to make sure the
oh,
audience understands that's multiple personality disorder, right?
narcissistic
Gotcha.
personality disorder.
Spelled
Yeah.
N-N-N. Okay.
N is in Nancy. Yes. Narcissistic personality disorder. And I qualify that because I think we all have narcissistic tendencies. We
Absolutely.
do. Yeah, we all have narcissistic tendencies. We've overused that word. We all have trauma. It's part of the human experience. Now to varying degrees for obvious reasons once we hear each other's stories, but I think we've villainized trauma and I think we've overused the word narcissist, but it was in the few times that we were able to get professional help that the diagnosis for him came out, and my diagnosis wouldn't come out until later. I had heard a woman's voice on the phone as I was traveling for work, and we were in an argument, and I was getting claustrophobic in the room, and I had been drinking because I spent 20 years drowning my self-hatred in a bottle. And we'll get to that if you don't let me forget the self-hatred that we high-functioning women live with. We were arguing. I was getting claustrophobic. I went down to the lobby and I was probably getting too loud. And instead of the front desk clerk going, "Yo, you're getting a little loud. Go back up to your room. Go somewhere else." I had managed to go out to my car that was parked out in front of the lobby, and a police officer walks up. It was my history at the time not to be as respectful and safe for myself and a little bit of a smart ass. And he was like, "Ma'am, what seems to be the problem?" And I said, "You can't do anything to me. My keys are not in the car." And he politely said, "Stand up, put your hands behind your back. You're going to jail for disorderly conduct." And I was sick as a dog. Orange jumpsuit gets put on me straight out of my corporate suit. And Brandon, I managed to get my orange jumpsuit on, stand in line to see the judge. There's a bathroom right there. I'm vomiting in the silver metal toilet in my orange jumpsuit, handcuffed feet and wrists. Get to the judge by 7 in the morning. I was back in my corporate suit by 10 a.m. and made it on site that very next morning. That's what I mean by high functioning.
That's the
And
high
nobody
functioning
knew.
survival,
Yes.
100%.
Yes. And nobody knew. That's a story that nobody knew. Even my own family, nobody knew that story and until it came out in the memoir. So the memoir is filled with the stories that I had the most shame shrouded around, and guilt and humiliation around my mental illness, around my psychosis, around the failure of my marriage that I blamed myself for so many years. And so writing it was, yes, a catharsis for me, but early readers have said, "I see myself in this." And that's where the companion field guide came from, because I wanted people to have a safe place to land should anything come up. I wanted them to have a place to go for reflections, for grounding exercises, for embodiment exercises, to dig a little bit deeper. But
Right.
yeah, the whole memoir is filled with stories that I thought I would never tell.
I think, I told my story in a book, and when it first was published, I was horrified. I'm like, wow, people are actually going to read this. And I'd be scared of like what people are going to read it. So I can't imagine, what is that feeling like for you? I know I'm digressing a little from our whole conversation, but like actually, what does that feel for you to think that it does come out there? Is there still kind of that feeling of like, holy shit, I'm doing this?
Absolutely, because writing it, letting early readers that feel kind of safe seeing it, letting my publisher, letting my editor see it, is completely different, as you well know, than the you hit the publish button and it is out there. So that will be yet another step in the process of really testing my vulnerability. So yeah, I'd be totally faking it if I said I'm not nervous for pre-sale October to come and November 1 launch to come. Yes, I'm terrified.
I can so feel that. And I bombed it. I just want to say, Lisa, I failed in all the ways you can imagine because I self-sabotaged so hard. I ended up being at the darkest point of my life. Like all I wanted, I'm like, I just want to be a published author. I get it published, and then just all of it came to me so fast. And it was a hard lesson, but it's such a beautiful, I'm glad because five books later, we're still doing it and I haven't died, right? Like you feel like you're gonna
We
survive.
survived.
Yes.
Yes, we
Yeah.
survived.
Yeah. So I
But we
still
want to do
believe
more
in
than
you.
just survive.
Right.
But yes,
Yeah.
I am aware that the publish button this time around, because I've got a couple of workbooks out that were a little bit of a memoir, but not the truth telling that this book is. So yeah, we're my whole team of professionals is ready to hold space for me as we
Oh, I
get
love
there.
that for you. I love that. And there's a story I had in my head where I just thought like the whole world's gonna know. And then the funny thing is like, girl, the whole world is not touching that book. So I was like, every time I'd be in public, I'm like, someone's looking at me and they know, but like
Well, we
not.
think that, right?
It's
Well,
so
that's what the
dumb.
loop that is
Yes.
in our head constantly,
That's
that,
so funny.
and that kind of brings us up to that that self-hatred
Yes.
that I was talking about. When you, I think the biggest thing that I've gotten, Brandon, from this recovery journey, recovery from all of it,
Yes.
has been that I like myself now.
Oh, yep.
And when you like who you are, when you dig who you are, when you know how you tick and click, know how you operate, you can articulate that to the people who love, care about you, and want to support you. It matters a lot less what other people think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's an incredible lesson too. And I
Yeah.
think it takes time and life experience. No one could have told me today to do the things I've done in the past 3 years. They couldn't have told me that when I was 20. I'd be like, fuck you. Like, you have no
Same.
idea. That's not going to work. So I feel like, I said it a minute ago of just like, what are we doing wrong? How come women don't get this? It is just part of it. It's our human experience. We came here to feel all the things. We have to learn lessons, most of us the hard way twice. And that's the magic of it. Now, I wish my life experience, I wish I would have liked myself a lot better, but also me not liking myself brought some incredible blessings through those lessons. So I think everybody comes to it, but like, of all people, I think women have become the greatest experts at hiding their pain. Why do you think that's the story?
I think in some cases, as was mine, I didn't have language for it, first of all. So I didn't even know it. I was so busy with the performance. I've been a performer from the time I was 5 years old and didn't realize I was performing in my life as well as on stage. So I didn't have language for it. It was only an inpatient rehabilitation where I started to hear the words codependency and trauma bonds and bipolar disorder and borderline and complex post-traumatic stress disorder and gaslighting. And you know, I walked into inpatient rehab thinking I had a slight drinking problem and a bad marriage, maybe, and walked out with I was like, and then I'm on the way home from Arizona, and I've worked in healthcare, so I always get my medical records, and I get to the last page, and I will never forget this moment. It said, "Prognosis for recovery, poor to none, due to lack of familial support." So they totally counted me out. They totally counted me out. So to get back to your question, I think some of it is we don't have a language for it. We don't even know that we're struggling ourselves. And that has to be step one. And that's my goal too for the memoir. When people close the book, I just wish for them to be in a reflective state about their own lives, about their own existences, and are they fulfilling their purpose and mission here in a way that works for them? Because I've done a lot of things that worked for other people. You know, we're taught to sacrifice to the point of exhaustion, women particularly. It's a totally different story to serve others from a place of self-service first. When we are full, we are pouring from an overflowing cup. When we are exhausted, people are getting our exhaust, and so are we. So I think we're conditioned backwards. We hopefully have the opportunity to provide for ourselves first, and then we are of better service to the people we love, care about, and serve.
No, I very much agree with that, and I think I was one of those kids that grew up hearing "I love you, but I don't like you," and my mom signed her rights off when I was 12, so that kind of secured it. I'm like, damn, she really doesn't like me, right? And that's it. My whole life was a performance. I'll be whoever you want me to be. Just, do you like me? Do you like me? People are like, we love Brandon. Yeah, but do you like me? Even my teacher, I still sometimes I'm like, you like me?
Isn't it weird how sticky it gets? And you brought up there is no destination. It is a process, and it takes what it takes for us. And I too was very stubborn, and until I was ready, I wasn't going to hear it. Now it took those nuggets of wisdom, and that's why I love long form conversation, because they're more nuanced and we can throw more nuggets of wisdom out there. I mean, somebody may listen to this and it may go straight through, and one little nugget of wisdom is going to drop, and 3 years from now, somebody will say the thing that makes them go, okay, now I've had my stomach full. For some of us, it takes 5 years. For some of us, it takes 30, and it's all okay. It's all okay. But it's amazing how sticky trauma is. I had a, and this is where self-awareness is so important. I had a, and on a TikTok, it is like the Wild Wild West, and you will get all kinds of trolls and oh my, there's some nasty comments on there. We'll just leave it at that. And I overlook those, and it just rolls right off. But one time, this guy said, your hair would look better longer. And about a week later, I was like, that jackass said my hair would look better longer. And I had to stop myself and had to go, well, wait a minute. Why is that still sticky? It had nothing to do with this comment. It had to do that my mother has never liked my hair ever, be it black or blue or purple or however I've had it. She's never liked my hair. So it wasn't about his comment. It was about being that 10-year-old little girl that was never good enough. No matter how many straight A's I made, no matter how many captain of teams I were, no matter how many leadership committees I ran, it was never enough. So it is amazing how sticky trauma can get. So that's where self-awareness comes into play and is so very valuable, because otherwise, had that been 5 years ago, that would still be looping a year later. That dude's comment would still be looping a year later. But now I have the self-awareness to go, whoa, I'm still thinking about this. Why? Oh, okay, that's why. That's why we do this, right? So the breakdowns go from a year to a couple months to a month to a week to maybe an hour, right?
I love that. And yeah, it's those triggers are just data. It's just data of like, okay, where can I grow and push through right here? I want to jump back for a second about your book, the diagnosis from the doctor, right? Like it's a lot of pages. There's a lot of words in there. I struggle with labels and people wanting them so bad. Like they want this answer. And like what I see happen a lot, what I know to be true, is that when someone says something, like a doctor says, you have cancer, like people will take that, run with it, and they're dead in 3 months. Other people, you have cancer, you're full of shit, I feel better than that. And then, 6 months to a year later, they're in remission. Did any of those labels, like, did you have to struggle with that becoming your identity? Or was it just like a, this makes sense, I can get outside of this?
No, I got really attached to the labels for a few years first, and I dislike labels very much. I think they're a great starting place for healing. And I'll even give you, for instance, my holistic psychiatrist now wants me to take this very expensive evaluation for autism because we may have been wrong. And my answer is no, it's not going to change what I do now. But it's a great starting place for healing. But if we get stuck there, I got stuck in victim mentality, which made me stay stuck in rage and anger for far, far, far too long. I got stuck in being other focused. It's their fault. It's his fault. He did, he did, he did. Instead of taking accountability for the fact that if every relationship in my life is toxic, there might just be a chance that I'm a little toxic too. Maybe, just maybe worth considering. So, absolutely, I got very hyper fixated, part of how my brain is built and designed on those labels. Oh, this is me now, right? Talking about identity. Oh, this is me now. And it was a process of working through and getting out of that. And now I tell people labels are a great starting place for healing, but we can't stay there. The goal is, as I'm sure you know from working with your clients, is a forward trajectory. And if what we're doing isn't moving us forward. Even talk therapy is a rite of passage, but you can only look backwards for so long before it becomes futile, right? Or even worse, keeps you stuck. The stories we tell ourselves, like the diagnosis, I am going to beat this, or this is going to take me. The stories we tell ourselves are so important in terms of where we end up.
I love
But
that so much.
absolutely, I got stuck. And a lot of anger and blame towards others instead of taking that finger, turning it on me, and going, where's my part? Where's my accountability? Most importantly, how can I change behaviors? Yeah.
And that's the part. And I think, it's where I see like a lot of in the coaching culture, I see a lot of toxic coaches because they keep people kind of in that story. I guess that's their meal ticket. But the same thing with therapists. Like, cool, I guess it's a rite of passage. Everybody should be able to say like, yeah, I went to a therapist once. But it's anytime I've ever had to go to therapy, it was just a constant rumination of everything. And I'm like, well, how do we move forward here? Like, I want to do something different. Like, how do we break the cycle? Never have I had anybody help me do that. That was just kind of something I fell into on my own experience, on my own life experience of just that awareness. But it's, yeah, the labels
Well,
are
and there's not one modality fits all. There's not. You know, AA was very much like that for me in terms of healing. Me being a woman with a history of trauma, with a history of sexual abuse, with a history of mental illness, it made me feel worse. But I did my time, 2 years, 6 days a week, sometimes two meetings a day, but eventually outgrew it, only to realize there are so many modalities for healing available to us now. But what we do is we think, oh, this didn't work. It must be me. Very shame-based. It must be me. It must be my fault. So we quit. We give up. We go back out. If what you're doing isn't working, try something else. Then try something else. Then try something else. There are a million paths home to yourself, and the first one may not be it. So instead of the self-judgment and the loops of, I'm not doing this right or try harder, the self-trust comes into play there. And I think that's an important part of the growth process too, to combat self-erasure. What are we looking for? We're looking for self-trust and getting back to trusting our own intuition. And it sounds like that's what you did, right? You trusted yourself, you trusted your own answers because we know for ourselves best. We do.
Well, I love how you just mentioned how, someone does something and it doesn't work and they think that they're the problem. Because I've struggled with that my whole life, and I did get the cool diagnosis before it was cool of I have a different brain than everybody else. It's a little neurospicy, right? We don't have to say all the letters of the alphabet because I never cared about it, didn't take the medication. I just needed to figure out like how could my brain work different. And I was like swimming uphill for till about 5 years ago of just I had demand avoidance. I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, even trying to put in systems that other people were doing, and they're like, if you're doing the work, it works. And I'm like, I'm doing the work, I'm broken, right? Like It was so frustrating, and I had to really I dug into neuroplasticity, and I'm like, okay, my brain isn't like other people's. I'm gonna have to accept that. It is different. Everyone's brain is different, though. I've realized that. So we all
Yes.
have like this degree of, we're all a little autistic. We're all a little everything. That's the whole point.
Yes.
And so I finally found the way that my brain could work for me. But all the years I spent thinking that I was the problem, when people just don't understand, in life, in business, in healing your trauma, it is about finding what really works for you. And really just trusting that nobody knows you better than you do.
Yeah.
But I think another thing too is like, people are so afraid to look in the mirror. I want to shake people sometimes. I'm like, just like, look in the mirror and take massive responsibility right here. Yes, your family sucked. Yes, your childhood sucked. But like, what are you going to do about it today? Who do you want to be tomorrow? They don't have control of that.
Yeah. Well, it requires a brutal honesty, right? It requires looking around going, let me take inventory of my life. Am I happy here? Am I fulfilling my purpose and mission? It requires brutal honesty. But I'm going to tell everybody out there what I realized after trying to run from these, what I thought were going to be horrible emotions of grief and sadness and all of it for 20 years. It wasn't that bad. It's never that bad when you turn and you sit with a little grief for a little while, or you give yourself time to process sadness, and I'm very cognizant of if something comes up and if it's not the place to process that. Say I get embarrassed or humiliated, or my husband says something and we're not in the place. I always try to circle back to it within the next 24 to 48 hours so it doesn't grow into something new that yet then I have trauma about a year from now. So what I uncovered was it's way better than what I was doing. The brutal honesty, turning and facing myself, facing the emotions was not as terrible as I thought it was going to be. But I grew up with the toughen up, suck it up, no emotions, don't cry, all the things. So I thought they were going to be terrible. And it's not that bad. The mirror look is not that bad.
It's really not. And a lot of us had done it, and we're still here again, right? Didn't kill
Yeah.
us, y'all. Did not kill
Better
us.
than we were. Yes.
Yes,
Yes.
that's important. This whole, podcast is because I think everybody, if you're a human, you have a story. And I think the story should be shared more often. I think, in this space, in the age and time, and all the distractions of our phones and everything, I think people telling their stories and becoming relatable, I think it's so important. So if you're speaking to my audience today, why do stories heal people in ways that general advice can't help them?
Well, our greatest teachers use stories to teach us. First of all, they set some great examples for us and how they work. Secondly, I think it's because if I were to tell you right now, here are 5 steps to fix your brain, it's going to do that thing we were talking about, right? You might remember one, it's
Yeah.
going to go right over you. But if I tell you my story, you are able to see pieces of yourself in it. And then it becomes that stickiness in a healthy way. So I think us sharing our story, and I love podcasts because it's long form conversation. We have a term for conversations now, which I think is kind of silly.
Insane.
It is.
It's
But
silly.
I love podcasts because these stories are nuanced and they need time and a 30 second. A TikTok video ain't gonna cut it for me, but stories allow us enough distance to see ourselves in other people. And most importantly, they let us know we're not defective, it's not all our fault, and we're not alone in
Alone.
it. Yeah.
I love that. How would you, or how do you advise people to begin rebuilding trust in themselves? Because you're talking about that earlier, how important that is. How do you start?
There are your body. Your body has a small whisper at first, but you have to be still enough. You have to be able, willing, curious. Willingness and curious are two of the most important emotional intelligence skills. that I don't think get enough attention. If you're willing to listen, if you're curious enough, there is a whisper inside of you that speaks to you. And if you will listen to that, the example I always use, when I met my current husband, we are 8 years sober together. We were only 30 days clean when we first met. He grayed early and he had a full beard, so he looked older, but he happens to be 16 years younger than me.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, that was really funny because I didn't know it until we were very far into our conversations together. And when I found out how old he was, I was like, you're out of here. I'm out of here. We're out of here. We're not doing this. I was about to run. I was going to run because it's not logical, right? We were freshly sober. We had all kinds of trauma. We had a huge age gap. So, all these reasons for it not to work were running through my head. And there was a still small whisper that said, lean in. And I listened. And we were on the couch at the time, and he was on one end, and I was on the other, and he had his hand up on the couch. And so I heard the voice, lean in. It was me talking to me. It was my subconscious talking to me, lean in. And I put my arm up on the back of the couch, and our fingers just happened to touch, and it was electricity. And it's been electricity ever since. But who knows where I would be if I didn't listen to that whisper that I had just now started to train myself to listen to. So listen to yourself more often, even if it's not logical. You know yourself, as you said, better than anyone else does because you're the only one who has lived your life.
That's amazing advice. I was going to ask a final question for the audience, but I don't need to. So now I just want you to tell us all about the memoir. Like, when did you realize you're going to go ahead and put this out? And
Well, I struggle with a congenital blood disease that keeps me in and out of the hospital, and I was hospitalized again at the beginning of this year and almost died again. And I had a new diagnosis of lupus pancreatitis thrown at me. It was very painful. And Brandon, in the past, when these have happened, I'm a workaholic. It's a coping mechanism. I know it. I'm aware of it. I would get out of the hospital, and if I got discharged on a Thursday, I'd be back to work on Monday. And this time I couldn't because I turned 50 right after. And we had big, big, big plans, lots of people involved. And I told everybody to screw off. I was going off to the mountains by myself with my 21-year-old Italian Greyhound, who I've had since he was 3 months old. It was just he and I. And that was a Monday. I turned 50 on a Wednesday, and I had this beautiful mountain view, and I'm crying because I'm not where I want to be. And that's when it came to me that I need to tell these stories. And that's how the memoir came about. And it wrote itself because they're the stories that I lived. But I did have to be willing and curious enough about what happens when I fight through the shame, fight through the guilt to tell the truth.
I love that. How can people follow you, get resourced with you now, and where are they looking for this book when it's released?
Easy peasy, best place to go is www.lisalacey.com. You can get on the pre-sale list. All my socials are listed there, and everything I'm into is there.
I love that. Lisa, this is the part of the show where, for what it's worth, I'm going to tell you what I think makes you special. It's not your resilience, it's not your recovery. It's not even the incredible stories that you've lived. I think what makes you special is really your willingness to tell the truth. The messy truth, that uncomfortable truth, the truth that I know a lot of people are going to spend a whole lifetime avoiding. You take experiences that so many people hide in shame, and you've turned it into a language, and you've put it into words that are going to help people understand themselves. And I think you just genuinely helping people realize they're not broken is incredibly powerful. Showing people that they're human is something that We need more people out in the world doing. And I think the fact that you're showing them maybe the thing they're most afraid to talk about is the thing that could really set them free. I think that is powerful. I'm excited for the legacy that you are leaving and the work that you're doing in this moment. I'm excited for your book to touch a lot of people because I think it will. To everyone listening, you don't have to earn your humanity. You don't have to perform the healing. You don't have to pretend you're okay when you're not. Because the truth is, every single one of us is carrying something, a wound, a fear, a story, a chapter we hate to talk about. But healing really starts the moment we stop running from it, and the moment we stop hiding, and the moment that we're going to be radically honest and tell the truth, starting with yourself. So I'm saying be courageous and be honest, and please remember, like, your story matters, and your mess is literally your message. And it's not because your pain defines you, but because your honesty might become someone else's permission slip to healing. If this episode spoke to you, do me a favor, help me get Lisa's episode in the hands of other people, because I guarantee she's going to resonate with a lot of people, and we can't reach the same people that you can. So share it out, and if you're ready for the hot seat, I dare you to come tell me why you're special. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on here with a lot of truth and a lot of vulnerability. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you for creating the space for us to talk.